wizards, from whom, as it were, all the spells of wizardry had flowed. But those days had gone. There were no more sorcerers. So the more typical method was to be sponsored by a senior and respected wizard, after a suitable period of apprenticeship. Competition was stiff for a university place, and the honour and privileges an unseen degree could bring. Many of the boys, milling around the hall and launching minor spells at each other, would fail and have to spend their lives as lowly magicians, mere magical technologists with defiant beards and leather patches on their elbows, who congregated in small, jealous groups at parties. Not for them the coveted pointy hat with optional astrological symbols, or the impressive robes, or the staff of authority. But at least they could look down on conjurers, who tended to be jolly and fat, and inclined to drop their H's and drink beer, and go around with sad, thin women in spangly tights, and really infuriate magicians by not realising how lowly they were, and kept telling them jokes. Lowliest of all, apart from witches, of course, were thaumaturgists, who never got any schooling at all. A thaumaturgist could just about be trusted to wash out an alembic. Many spells required things like mould from a corpse dead of crushing, or the semen of a living tiger, or the root of a plant that gave an ultrasonic scream when it was uprooted. Who was sent to get them? Right. It is a common error to refer to the lower magical ranks as hedge wizards. In fact, hedge wizardry is a very honoured and specialised form of magic that attracts silent, thoughtful men of druidical persuasion and topiric inclinations. If you invited a hedge wizard to a party, he would spend half the evening talking to your potted plant, and he would spend the other half listening. Esk noticed that there were some women in the hall, because even young wizards had mothers and sisters. Whole families had turned up to bid the favoured sons farewell. There was a considerable blowing of noses, wiping of tears, and the clink of coins as proud fathers tucked a little spending money into their offspring's hands. Very senior wizards were perambulating among the crowds, talking to the sponsoring wizards and examining the prospective students. Several of them pushed through the throng to meet Treacle, moving like gold-trimmed galleons under full sail. They bowed gravely to him and looked approvingly at Simon.
"This is young Simon, is it?"
said the fattest of them, beaming at the boy.
"We've had great reports of you, young man, eh? What?"
Simon bowed to the Arch-Chancellor Cutangle, Arch-Mage of the Wizards of the Silver Star, said Treacle. Simon bowed apprehensively. Cutangle looked at him benevolently.
"We've heard great things about you, my boy," he said. "All this mountain air must be good for the brain, eh?"
He laughed. The wizards around him laughed. Treacle laughed, which Esk thought was rather funny, because there wasn't anything particularly amusing happening.
"From what we hear, it must be the only thing you don't know, lad,"
said Cutangle, his jowls waggling. There was another carefully timed bout of laughter. Cutangle patted Simon on the shoulder.
"This is the scholarship boy," he said. "Quite astounding results. Never seen better. Self-taught, too. Astonishing, what? Isn't that so, Treacle?"
"Superb, Arch-Chancellor." Cutangle looked around at the watching wizards.
"Perhaps you could give us an example," he said. "A little demonstration, perhaps."
Simon looked at him in animal panic.
"Actually, I'm not very..."
Now,
said Cutangle, in what he probably really did think was an encouraging tone of voice.
"Do not be afraid. Take your time. When you are ready."
Simon licked his dry lips and gave Treacle a look of mute appeal. He said. He stopped and swallowed hard. His eyes bulged, the tears streamed from his eyes, and his shoulders heaved. Treacle patted him reassuringly on the back.
"Hay fever," he explained. "Don't seem to be able to cure it. Tried it."